Thank you very much, David. It's a real pleasure to be here, and thank you to the Foundation for hosting the webinar today, and to organisations that have supported the work that Graham and I have been doing over recent months. And they are the British Academy, the School of Advanced Study at the University of London, and the Wales Innovation Network. Our intention in the work we've been doing has been to stimulate discussion and gather a wide range of views. So today's webinar is particularly valuable, and we would really encourage all of you in the audience to share your views in the Q&A. The government's ambition for the UK to become a science superpower has been widely welcomed, as David said. Graham and I want to explore the choices facing policymakers on that journey. So our question is not if we can get there, but assuming we will get there, what different versions of a UK science superpower are available? Which do we want? What do we value about each of them? And so what choices face policymakers that could determine the destination at which we arrive? In my view, there is an enormous opportunity at hand. And if we can examine these choices and move purposefully towards an end goal we want, I believe we can harness the political will and the investment commitments that have already been made to deliver a more innovative R&D-led UK economy and culture with the widest possible benefit to all. The science superpower phrase has been used for some time and by politicians across the top of government for a number of years now. We have a couple of examples here. Firstly, we see the Prime Minister associating the science superpower phrase with his levelling up agenda back in 2021. And in this example, the then Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, associating the science superpower agenda with fiscal incentives such as R&D tax credits. And this was at the spending review of last autumn. And finally, earlier this year, the government chief scientific advisor, Patrick Vallance, wrote in a blog about the global science superpower, associating that ambition with strategic policy making and strategic advantage. Over the last few months, Graham and I have been conducting roundtables and interviews with stakeholders across the R&D community and across the whole of the UK. And we have really tried to widen our discussions so that they reached broadly across all of academia, across different disciplines in policy expertise, science, humanities, and so on, into business, into government and various parts of government with an interest in R&D, including defence, the business department, and the Government Office for Science, through funding bodies, think tanks, through our colleagues in international diplomacy, and many more. As you might expect, we've heard a wide range of reactions to the phrase science superpower. And I'm sure all of you in the audience have your own views on what it means to you. We've gathered together some categories, some types of responses that we heard several times. And I've summarized them here for you now. It may not come as a surprise in a community which really highly values definition of terms that some of the first and most frequent reactions were about its definition. So many respondents have said to us, well, I don't know what it means. But some have said, I don't know what it means, but it sounds exciting. And I think it's something I want to be part of. Others have said, I don't know what it means, and I'm concerned about its overtones or its meaning. Some of those questions around definition have related to the term science. What is included in that phrase? Does it include humanities, arts, social sciences? Does it include engineering and innovation? Some concerns have been around the term superpower. Many have felt that it is not as inclusive as they would like it to be, that it perhaps has some historic throwback overtones that people have observed may make them feel uncomfortable or maybe uncomfortable in international relations. Some have observed that being a science superpower is not something one can attribute to oneself. It's actually a recognition that others give to you, so that the UK will only be a science superpower when others say that we are such. But a good number have really recognised it as a political slogan and recognised that it has won wide support. Graham and I have done some work to review the kind of support that phrase has gathered from external sources. And here we share some of the quotes that we found in broadsheet newspapers and online, where we see some large corporates reflecting and aligning with the science superpower ambition, often with intimation that it may lead to further investment on their part. So, for example, in this quote by Legal & General in the Financial Times. So we can at least say that the science superpower phrase is one that signals both internally into the R&D community and signals externally, and it may entice different reactions in the communities that it reaches. So in order to explore different versions of a UK science superpower, Graham and I first thought about where we are now. Where is UK research and innovation system at the moment? And of course, there are many important and different ways in which one could measure and assess this. We will think and talk about the economic goals, the investment goals, but of course one can talk about the goals around education and skills, the workforce for science, educational uptake and attainment, geographic distribution of R&D, international comparisons, and of course many more. But just focusing for a moment on the economic metric, we know that the proportion of the economy attributed to R&D at the moment is around about 1.7-1.8%, and we know that it has been at approximately that level for some decades now. And one of the elements of the science superpower ambition is the economic goal to really rapidly increase that proportion of the economy attributed to R&D to 2.4% and beyond. Graham and I have thought about three scenarios in which we might achieve that science superpower status. They're not mutually exclusive, and they can be thought of as points in a continuum. And we've designed them to be contrasting and to be tools to help us stimulate debate. And I'm going to hand over now to Graham to talk a little bit more about those scenarios and our exploration of those with our stakeholders.